from about 15 years on up, a great deal of my thoughts were basically unshareable.
We are all evil in some form or another. Yes, I am evil. Not 100%, but I am evil.
My mother was a sick, angry, hungry, and very sad woman. I hated her, but I wanted to love my mother.
This is Serial Killing, a podcast.
Hello again, and welcome to Serial Killing, a podcast, where we sometimes veer off the serial killer path to delve into other topics within our beloved true crime community. Special thanks to my patrons who voted for this episode. Thank you so much. You are truly appreciated. And for anyone else, please feel free to join my patrons so that you can vote on who will be covered next or get early access to the podcasts. Like, share, and subscribe. It might just help our little community grow. So, today's podcast was voted for by patrons and will be on true crime science, psychopathy, and sociopathy, and the difference between the two. And this is an interesting subject because in all the years I have been studying human behavior, mental illness, and personality disorders, many sources seem to, you know, quite frankly, fumble when it comes to the differences between these two. So today, we are going to tackle these two and get to the bottom of the differences. But first, we must start at the beginning. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition, or the DMS-5, states that there are 10 specific personality disorders. They are paranoid, schizoid, schizotypal, borderline, histrionic, narcissistic, avoidant, dependent, obsessive-compulsive, and then the one we will be discussing today, antisocial personality disorder. This disorder is defined in the DMS as, quote, a pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others, criminality, impulsivity, and a failure to learn from experience, end quote. Antisocial personality disorder is in what we call the Cluster B group of personality disorders. As we've discussed before, Cluster A includes paranoid, schizoid, and schizotypal personality disorders. Cluster C includes avoidant, dependent, and obsessive-compulsive personality disorders. But the Cluster B group is the one that we in the true crime community seem to talk the most about: borderline, histrionic, narcissistic, and antisocial. According to the DSM, the essential feature of antisocial personality disorder is a pervasive pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others that begins in childhood or early adolescence and continues into adulthood. Deceit and manipulation are central features of ASPD. Individuals with ASPD frequently lack empathy and tend to be callous, cynical, and contemptuous of the feelings, rights, and sufferings of others. They may have an inflated and arrogant self-appraisal. In other words, they feel that ordinary work is beneath them, or they lack a realistic concern about their current problems or their future. They may be excessively opinionated, self-assured, or cocky. Some antisocial individuals may display a glib, superficial charm and can be quite voluble and use technical terms or jargon that might impress someone who is unfamiliar with the topic. Now, moving sources from the DSM to another, we'll go with Psychology Today, and it describes ASPD as, quote, ingrained pattern of behavior in which individuals consistently disregard and violate the rights of others around them. Individuals with antisocial personality disorder may behave violently, recklessly, or impulsively, often with little regard for the wants and needs of others. People with antisocial personality disorder may seem charming on the surface, but they are likely to be irritable and aggressive, as well as irresponsible. Due to their manipulative tendencies, it may be difficult to tell whether they are lying or tell the truth. The diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder is not given to individuals under the age of 18, and this is key. However, ASPD symptoms will first appear in childhood or adolescence and may garner a diagnosis of conduct disorder during that time. Antisocial personality disorder is much more common in males than in females. End quote. And yet a third source, coming from the American Psychiatric Association, quote, people with antisocial personality disorder may repeatedly disregard or violate the rights of others, may lie, deceive or manipulate others, act impulsively, or disregard their or others' safety. They may have problems with drug or alcohol use, they may violate the law, and typically show no remorse or guilt. While antisocial personality disorder is only diagnosed in adults aged 18 or older, individuals show signs earlier and may be diagnosed with conduct disorder as a child or teen. Long-term studies show that symptoms of antisocial personality disorder typically lessen as individuals age. End quote. So we see that the description of ASPD across sources seems to really match up pretty well. And it is true that this isn't diagnosed in individuals younger than 18. Below 18, it is most often diagnosed as conduct disorder, but ASPD and conduct disorder display supremely similar behaviors, and it is important to look at within this discussion. John Hopkins Medicine states that conduct disorder is a behavior disorder where a child may disregard basic social standards and rules. They may be irresponsible, skip school, run away, steal and violate the rights of others, and/or physically harm other people or animals. So then that begs the next logical question, which is, what causes conduct disorder in children? Most experts believe it involves a few factors, such as a head injury or brain damage, traumatic events, genetics, child abuse, school failures, and social problems, along with issues at home, such as being quite disadvantaged, dysfunctional, or disorganized. Children who also suffer with mood or anxiety disorders, post-traumatic stress disorders, substance abuse disorders, ADHD, and/or learning problems are at a higher risk for developing conduct disorder. Now, as a side note, when I did the true crime science on ADHD and crime, a lot of anger was thrown my way, so I think this is a good place to say that just because a child or a person has ADHD, that does not mean that they are automatically dangerous. I personally know quite a few people, two of which have rather severe ADHD, and it would never occur to them to cause harm to anyone. I just want to make that clear. It's the impulsivity portion that ADHD and ASPD have in common. But we also know that most people with ASPD don't want to hurt people either. So that's my disclaimer. So John Hopkins goes on to say that, quote, most symptoms seen in children with conduct disorder also happen at times in children without this problem. But in children with the disorder, these symptoms occur more often. They also interfere with learning, school adjustment, and sometimes with the child's relationships. There are four main groups of behaviors, which include aggressive conduct, destructive conduct, deceitfulness, and violation of rules or age-appropriate norms. If the child is identified and taken somewhere for help, this help includes cognitive behavioral therapy, where the child is taught how to better solve problems, communicate more effectively, and handle their stress to better be able to control their anger and impulses. Family therapy can also help improve communication and family interactions. Peer group therapy is also beneficial to help the child develop some social and interpersonal skills, and then sometimes medication can be introduced, but only to manage some comorbid, like ADHD symptoms, not the conduct disorder itself. But the takeaway is that Though we don't fully know the sort of black and white causes, it is thought that it is a combination of environment and genetics, nature and nurture. According to the NHS, antisocial personality disorder is a particularly challenging type of personality disorder characterized by impulsive, irresponsible, and often criminal behavior. Someone with antisocial personality disorder will typically be manipulative, deceitful, and reckless, and will not care for other people's feelings. Like other types of personality disorders, antisocial personality disorder is on a spectrum, which means that it can range in severity from occasional bad behavior to repeatedly breaking the law and committing serious crimes. Oh, and don't be scared, because it only affects between 1 to 4% of the total population. Some famous people who were diagnosed with ASPD include Ted Bundy, Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, Edmund Kemper. I mean, really, most of the big players in our little industry. Now, under the umbrella or category of antisocial personality disorder are psychopathy and sociopathy. We hear people calling others psychopaths or sociopaths fairly interchangeably, but there are some differences. So let's start with psychopathy. According to the National Library of Medicine, National Center for Biotechnology Information, quote, psychopathy is a neuropsychiatric disorder marked by deficient emotional responses, lack of empathy, and poor behavioral controls, commonly resulting in persistent antisocial deviance and criminal behavior. Accumulating research suggests that psychopathy follows a developmental trajectory with strong genetic influences, listen to that, and which precipitates deleterious effects on widespread functional networks, particularly within paralimbic regions of the brain, end quote. Now, I know that sounds pretty technical, but the two things to take from that are the strong genetic influences and the effects on the brain, with an emphasis on the paralimbic regions of the brain. So what are the paralimbic regions, right? So those regions of the brain specialize in behaviors that sort of integrate external stimuli with the internal environment. You can picture this area as sort of a transition area between the sort of extreme internal part of the brain, like the really big egg-shaped part of the brain, and the outer regions, the upper outer regions. But psychopathy involves more than just that area of the brain. So let's take a look at the psychopathic brain. God, I love doing these, guys. Okay, so the psychopathic brain has been an interest of study for decades due to the fact that psychopaths represent such a small segment of society and yet commit a highly disproportionate amount of criminal acts. Suffice to say, a psychopathic brain is indeed different from what we would think of as a normal brain. The amygdala, which are these sort of little two kind of bean-sized areas behind the eyes, sort of between the eye and the ear on the side of your head for a visual, okay? And it is critical in the acquiring of information around us that reinforces learning. Learning is what teaches us what societal norms are, and without that, we may be more prone to antisocial behaviors. The amygdala also allows a person to recognize emotionally important information, such as the presence of threats. In recent research, psychopathic brains showed less activation in the amygdala when viewing pictures showing kind of moral violations or fearful faces, suggesting these things simply affect a psychopathic brain less. The greater the level of psychopathy, the less the activation seen in the amygdala. And again, I've said this 100 times. If you guys have been with me, you should understand or at least recognize the amygdala situation. And then we have the prefrontal cortex. So basically behind your forehead at the front of your brain. Areas of the prefrontal cortex are important in monitoring our own behavior, estimating the consequences, and combining emotional learning into our future sort of decision-making processes. So if this area is deficient, this could mean that, for psychopaths, whatever they would learn through emotions would not affect future decisions, and they may underestimate the consequences of their actions. A section of the prefrontal cortex, the orbitofrontal cortex, which is on the very bottom of that region behind your forehead, kind of the bottom of the rounded front part, shows reduced gray matter in volume and thickness in psychopaths. And again, it is important to remember that the more severe the psychopathy, the greater the deficiency in this area seems to be. When psychopaths decide to cooperate with testing, and that's if and when they decide, they show less activation here. And when they observe an opponent being punished, this area activates more than in the normal brain, which correlates with the antisocial behavior and impulsivity traits. So neuroscientists using MRI scans discovered that psychopathic people have a 10% larger striatum, which is on the kind of outer part of the most internal region of the brain, than regular people. This represents a clear biological distinction between psychopaths and non-psychopathic people. Neuroscientists from Nanyang Technological University, or NTU Singapore, along with the University of Pennsylvania and California State University, have discovered a biological distinction between psychopaths and non-psychopaths. Using MRI scans, scientists discovered that the striatum was 10% bigger in psychopathic people compared to a control group of individuals with low or no psychopathic traits. These regions of the brain, the striatum that encompasses the whole cerebrum, coordinates numerous elements of cognition, including motor and action planning, decision making, motivation, reinforcement, and reward perceptions. So researchers have linked having larger striatum to an increased need for stimulation through thrills and excitement, and a higher likelihood of impulsive behaviors. Oh, and this size difference holds true for males and females. In human development, the striatum typically becomes smaller as a child matures, suggesting that psychopathy could be related to differences in how the brain develops. And, of course, more research is needed. That's always the disclaimer, right? More research is needed. Another factor is head trauma. We're well aware of this, guys. According to an article written for sagejournals.com, quote, psychopathic traits and a history of traumatic brain injury, or TBI, are common among imprisoned individuals. Research has shown that history of a TBI significantly predicted callous, unemotional, and impulsive, irresponsible traits. Clinical implications suggest early intervention is needed to treat the potential long-term effects of TBIs and the development of psychopathic traits, end quote. Psychopathic behaviors are also associated with injury to the cerebral cortex, which regulates memory and self-awareness, and the frontal lobe, which is responsible for self-control and judgment. We talked about the prefrontal cortex. And this holds especially true for younger children who experience head trauma. Quite a bit of our, you know, quite a few or fair amount of the people that we talk about in the true crime community did suffer head trauma as a child. And then when it comes to genetics, very little is known about the genetic and environmental structure of psychopathy, as it is incredibly hard to do the actual studies. We can review what is known about family background factors as predictors of psychopathic symptoms. Some studies suggest that psychopathic traits begin in early age and they are partly heritable and are evident in childhood. Studies with twins have shown that callous, unemotional traits, such as no sense of guilt or remorse, fearlessness, lack of affection, or unresponsiveness to punishment, appear to be moderately to strongly heritable. Recent genetic research suggests modest to high heritability of psychopathic traits, and we do know that genes play a significant role in the development of psychopathy. However, socialization and other environmental factors interact with genetics, so genes are not the only determinant in whether a person has psychopathic traits. As far as we know, there is no such thing as a, quote, psychopathy gene. But research tells us that psychopathy tends to run in families, even if a parent does not have psychopathy. They may carry one or more genetic variants that increases the likelihood or the child's chances of developing psychopathy. And so, of course, you know that I will take any chance I can to riz up Dr. James Fallon. He's my psychology nerd crush. He has studied the brains of psychopaths and the biological basis for behavior. And one of his specialties is to try to figure out how a killer's brain differs from ours. I'm going to get a little technical here, so bear with me, okay, guys? Stick with me. Along with studying brain scans, Dr. Fallon also tested for genes that are associated with violence. He specifically looked at 12 genes related to aggression and violence and hunted and dug until he locked in on the MAOA gene, the monoamine oxidase A. This gene, which I've talked about numerous times, is also known as the, quote, warrior gene because it plays a role in regulating serotonin in the brain. Its biological function is complex and multi-layered, helping to regulate mood, cognition, reward, learning, memory, and numerous physiological processes such as vomiting and vasoconstriction. But back to the warrior gene. Many scientists believe that if you have a variant of the warrior gene, which Dr. Fallon also says is a major violence gene, your brain won't respond to the calming effects of serotonin either. And this gene is sex-linked, meaning that it is only on the X chromosome. So guys, come on, take a walk with me and experience the light bulb moment I'm going to give you right now. Oh, I love this. The X chromosome, where this variant warrior gene resides, is inherited only through the mother. So when two parents have a daughter, she gets two X chromosomes, one from the mother and one from the father. So if this variant is hanging out in the mother's kind of genetic code, so to speak, it can be sort of diluted down with the X chromosome from the father. But if the parents have a son, the son inherits the X chromosome and thus the variant warrior gene. But he inherits the Y chromosome from his father, so that dilution factor is just not there like it is with the daughter. And this, my friends, this is believed to be why there are, by far and wide, more psychopathic killers who are male. I know, absorb it. I know, it blew my mind too. Just soak it up, you're so welcome. And if you really pay attention to the stories behind a lot of these serial killers I've covered, you will see a sort of pattern with sons and mothers. As much as people like to argue with me with regards to Jeffrey Dahmer and his mother, I did a whole ancestry search regarding his mother's side and found that her father was an abusive alcoholic who it is rumored to have also sexually assaulted her. His father, her grandfather, was said to have been nearly the same. Jeffrey's mother, at least to me in my opinion, this is just my educated opinion, seemed to reside rather firmly in the Cluster B family of personality disorders herself. And do not get me started on Edmund Kemper and his mother, and Ed Gein and his mother. I could go on and on, but you get the point. So, anyway, that covers psychopathy, so now let's talk about sociopathy. According to Psychology Today, quote, sociopathy refers to a pattern of antisocial behaviors and attitudes including manipulation, deceit, aggression, and a lack of empathy for others. Sociopathy is a non-diagnostic term, and it is not synonymous with psychopathy, though the overlap leads to frequent confusion. Sociopaths may or may not break the law, but by exploiting and manipulating others, they violate the trust that the human enterprise runs on. End quote. Consistent behavioral patterns that are associated with sociopathy include a lack of empathy for others, impulsive behavior, attempting to control others with threats and aggression, using intelligence, charm, and/or charisma to manipulate others, not learning from mistakes or punishments, lying for personal gain, showing a tendency to physical violence and fights, generally superficial relationships, sometimes stealing or committing other crimes, threatening suicide to manipulate without intent to act, sometimes abusing drugs or alcohol, and issues with responsibilities such as keeping a job, paying bills, and so on. Now, what does this sound quite a bit like? Yeah, psychopathy. And like psychopathic people, sociopaths who have a family history of personality disorders or those who have experienced abuse or neglect as children are more likely to develop sociopathy. Another similarity is that men are more likely than women to have sociopathy. Sociopaths are also more likely to abuse their partners, spouses, and children than other people. Since they could potentially engage in criminal behavior, they are also more likely to spend some time in prison, and their aggressive behavior can put them at risk of harm. They may have other mental health disorders like depression or anxiety. Long-term therapy is needed, which of course can be difficult to say the least, because sociopaths may not recognize that there even is a problem. If they are willing to enter therapy, family involvement will most likely help. Sometimes, a psychiatrist will prescribe medications such as antipsychotic drugs or mood stabilizers, which may help prevent impulsive or aggressive behaviors. But medication is not a cure for antisocial personality disorder. And side note, this also holds true for antidepressants and other medications. They are not a cure either, but they can help soften the symptoms, which is the case for me. Now, therapy sessions to learn about harmful behaviors and their impact on the person thought of as a sociopath, as well as the impact on those around them, can be beneficial. Therapy can teach the person ways to cope and manage behavior to improve relationships and behavior patterns. This can help improve social skills and coping mechanisms, making the person diagnosed with ASPD happier and more productive. But again, the trick is getting them to recognize that there is an issue there and to get them to go to therapy and want to play an active role in getting some help. And this also holds true for people thought to be psychopaths. And now we have come to the meat of this discussion, which is what is the difference between sociopathy and psychopathy? So Jack Pement of the University of Mississippi Biology Department wrote an excellent publication regarding the need for this distinction called Aggression and Violent Behavior, Psychopathy versus Sociopathy, Why the Distinction Has Become Crucial, Aggression and Violent Behavior. That was a mouthful. And it says, quote, "The terms psychopath and sociopath are often used interchangeably, but there appears to be some hesitance by researchers in the many disciplines comprising criminology to continue this trend. The problem seems to be that as research has advanced in studies of psychopathy, which is the more common of the two terms, psychopathy now commands a much more specific definition, and this is what alienates it from its estranged cousin, sociopathy. As language can serve to hinder or confound research, it is crucial that these terms take their proper place in brain science." End quote. Mr. Pement presents how the two terms are currently used in neuroscience and psychology and suggests how research in sociopathy should progress. As I said before, society uses both terms kind of interchangeably. Calling someone a psychopath or sociopath in common conversation happens all the time, and we all know both are used to describe people who appear to display the behaviors of these two terms. Psychopathy means the individual will have no empathy or sense of morality, among a number of other traits. Sociopathy, on the other hand, is indicative of having some sense of morality and a developed conscience, but the sense of right and wrong is not that of the parent culture. So the empathy circuit proposed by Baron Cohen consists of 10 regions, all with a valuable role in empathy, which represents our ability to understand another's emotional disposition. It allows neuroscience to be able to join in discussions of morality. Some of the regions mentioned are areas that failed to develop in the psychopath. These regions include certain areas of the frontal cortex, the ACC, and the amygdala. We can logically see that psychopaths who have no sense of morality have compromised areas in the empathy circuit. If sociopaths do have a sense of morality, then it would be crucial to know how their brain compares to psychopaths. And many physicians and neuroscientists refer to sociopathy in terms of acquired sociopathy, which is usually when a brain injury or dementia in the frontal lobe or lobes results in antisocial behavior. You've all heard of the case of Phineas Gage, right? He worked on the railroad in the 1800s. There was an explosion that happened on the job site, and this huge metal spike just shot up through his head, through his frontal lobe. He survived. It is believed that the rod pierced through his ventromedial prefrontal cortex. But then after the accident, he went from being a responsible worker to an irresponsible, profane person who displayed an uncharacteristic indifference to the social rules of his time. It is this kind of personality change caused by damage to the frontal lobe that defines acquired sociopathy. Psychopathy research has been thorough, and the term has taken on an incredible amount of meaning because psychopathy is a developmental disorder that is associated with specific kinds of behavior. Next, if we use the definition that sociopaths have a sense of morality, we have to allow for brain differences that are not present in the psychopath. And last, acquired sociopathy, which is very different from psychopathy, seems to be satisfied by the mere presence of antisocial behavior brought about by lesions, both from trauma and surgery, or dementia, displays traits of impulsivity, risk-taking, and violence. A psychopath is a person who has ASPD, characterized by a lack of regard for the rights and feelings of others, controlled and manipulative behavior, the absence of shame, and an inability to form emotional relationships. Both disorders have an antisocial deviance domain, right? But characteristics such as shallowness, callousness, lack of empathy, and emotional detachment are uniquely psychopathic traits. Research has shown that psychopathy is highly correlated with abnormal brain activity that is a product of both genetics and very early developmental problems. The current belief is that psychopathy generally comes from genetic factors, such as parts of the brain not developing fully along with environmental factors, while sociopathy results from an interruption in personality development by abuse or trauma in childhood. So although this is not completely accurate, it's mostly accurate, it's slightly flawed. The oversimplified way that I personally think about the differences is that psychopaths are the nature side and sociopaths are the nurture side. Psychopaths are born with the ability and through negative environmental abuse, neglect, etc., make them what they are. Whereas sociopaths are born normal, but through environmental issues and possible traumas, become what they are. Again, super oversimplified, but it's kind of a generalized way to look at it. Psychopaths are born, sociopaths are made. Kind of. So, you know, I hope this has given you some insight into the differences between the two, which reside under the umbrella, again, of antisocial personality disorder. You know, guys, I've really enjoyed this one. I think these might be one of my favorites. And if you weren't able to join the live on YouTube, I have put together a giveaway if we can get the Facebook fan page to 500 members, which includes a physical copy of my favorite true crime book, a serial killing t-shirt with a thumbnail on it, a personal thank you note from me, and I'll throw in some small goodies. There will be other giveaways as we hit other milestones. But most importantly, as always, thank you guys so much for listening, because I know you could be listening to anyone else, but you chose me and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
Anybody who killed more than two or three people was a mass. mass murderer. And whether it was all at one place or over an extended period of time, and then in the early 80s, they came up with this differentiation called serial killing.